Blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels. Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami. Dityampi, Tatyampi, Samaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharma, Saranam, Gacchami. Dityampi, Tatyampi, Samaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion. By compassionate aspiration that harms no one. By compassionate speech that makes for clarity. By compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret. By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. thy compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts, the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the stole of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
You're here to end suffering.
If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering.
If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering.
If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering.
We are not here to create and cling to beliefs.
We are here to pay attention.
We are here to use everything in our experience
to see how we cause ourselves to suffer,
so we can drop that and end suffering.
What shall we talk about this morning? Chris.
Okay. I just want to share because it seems hard to share. And what I know I can share is that, or someone says it's okay to start off with, is just being so grateful to be here. And so, just feeling so lucky that I made it, that I got here alive, and
that you made it here alive.
Yeah.
All right.
Literally. Mm-hmm. And
it is kind of literal, isn't it? Sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing how much support and patience and just kindness that is at every turn. You know, I'm conditioning tell me I'm asking too many questions and then I'm bugging, you know, just all this stuff, and it's just like, no, and I just keep at it, and I just get more and more support and kindness. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
And what's your experience with that support? What kind of what happens inside of you and the kindness?
Well, it feels like I'm learning how to do it for myself, or like mentors more here for me to support myself too. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. like the modeling I'm witnessing and mm-hmm. taking in. Especially about this pain stories and the back and all this pain this and pain that, and just getting so much kindness about learning, you know, how to love myself and take care of my body. Mm-hmm. That just seems so huge. It's like this is, pain is just in such a roadblock to so much life and so much fun and so much happiness and activity.
It seems like it when conditioning is traveled up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, without the conditioning, maybe not so much.
Right. That's what's so liberating. That's what feels so like just so exciting. Like it's, I might be able to play tennis again, or all these things that I just, or that I just thought, nope, you know, conditioning said nope, those days are done, you know, it's ever since whatever, surgery or since this, or you can't do all these things. And so, just every day, taking such good care of this body, and like speaking up for it, and treating it so right, and eating so healthy, and just feels like just such a, just everything, the whole package, you know.
Boy, it's such good practice, isn't it? Yeah, it's so different from the practice of relating to, especially something like pain, through conditioned mind. You know, just making it, just turns it into suffering. It turns it into, you know, limitations and this is impossible, that's impossible. But when that mentor is there and that kindness is there, in a way, it's kind of a doorway. It can be kind of a doorway to what we're looking for, just like anything else in life can be.
Yeah, it trapped me, you know, painted me into a corner, into a real dark dungeon. And you know, I didn't even realize, or it was hard to see that was even a story, or that was going on at all. You know,
It just seemed real.
It just seemed so real. Mm-hmm. And like, well, medically real, you know, whatever, however it framed it. So just feeling so grateful and just like happy to be me and to get to be a human and get to be, you know, this Chris.
Just to get to be Chris, just to get to be a human. Instead of getting to be or being forced to be a separate human, stuck in a life with conditioning, basically, without access to the kindness and the goodness. Thank you. Sequoia.
I'm kind of looking at something along those lines of looking at into the dungeon parts of my life.
And, lifting up the trap door and kind of looking down there.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before, you know, I just, I've just been seeing there's a lot of fear. I mean, literal, and this is just such a great metaphor. There's a lot of fear about shining the light in dark corners and looking into, you know,
dark. You mean actually?
Actually looking into dark. I don't want to know what's there, you know. I don't want to know what's under the house. I don't want to know what's, you know, in that sealed box, you know. I don't want to know what's under the Band-Aid, you know. I just don't. Yeah, just watching a lot of fear come up about that. What you know, just kind of tiptoeing around all those things, and at the same time, really coming to a place of there. I'm also aware there is a deep desire to really look.
I bet.
Because I know it's the path to freedom.
Yeah. What you're looking for is in there, isn't it?
It's in there, you know.
Or through there, anyway.
Or through there, yeah.
It probably is not at all like the conditioned imagination is presenting it to be.
Yeah, probably not, but boy.
Through the illusion of it.
It what?
It's available through the illusion of it.
Yeah. And it can just seem so frightening. To shine the light in those dark places.
And it's a, what's the fear of?
Yeah, it's a good, what is the fear of? there's just going to be something so awful. Just so awful that it's something that's so awful that it would just really confirm the awfulness of me or the awfulness of life, you know.
And it's undefined?
And it's undefined,
yeah. Boy, that's classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't look.
Yeah.
There's something horrible over there. And of course, if you look, you'll find out there isn't anything horrible there. But as long as it has you not looking, then there's no way to find that out. It's perfect trap.
it is a trap.
So would you say that it's its fear or your fear?
I can say it's its fear. You know, it seems to be its fear that, I mean, what arises is that, I mean, it, why is it, it is just bringing, you know, so much fear to this, so because it, there must be something there that is very threatening to ego, that just really doesn't, you know, wants to keep me from that.
Oh, I bet, you know, just kind of logically, you know, what's going to threaten ego? Well, something good, something expansive, something happy, something that's connecting, that's not separate.
Yeah, I get that sense that, wow, if one could really turn the flashlight on real dig and go into those places, oh my gosh. You know, to have nothing like that, just, you know, lugging around, in one's being, that, you know, those unexamined places, wow, what freedom.
Yeah, it really limits what's possible, doesn't it?
It does.
To have something hanging around like that that you can't look into.
Yeah, yeah. And so I've been asking, you know, to see what are those places. What are those places that that I try not to look at. And so far, anything that's been exposed hasn't been huge, you know. But I have a sense that it's like a lot of little things that just kind of accumulate. And
like what kind of things?
Well, I'm just right now. I'm just looking at what are the things that I personally try to hide about myself.
I see. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm. You know, behaviors.
I see.
Are, you know, ways that I am, quote, not perfect. You know, you know, and times when I, you know, I don't tell the truth, or I, you know, I try to look really good when I'm not feeling really good.
Yeah, boy, that's helpful, isn't it?
Yeah.
But so let me see if I'm with you. So I think what you're saying basically is that you're afraid, or we might say conditioning is afraid. It's trying to have you afraid of this idea. Basically, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Just to kind of put in the context of the retreat we just had.
Right.
And you're conditioned to believe that that's true. And so you believe it, but you're also simultaneously trying to hide it from everybody and pretend like that's not true. Pretend properly, even, I know for me, like pretend to myself that I don't believe that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then we get caught in all kinds of sort of strange behaviors.
Yeah.
That protect. It seems like we're sort of protecting ourselves because it's keeping other people's attention away from this supposed fact that there's something wrong with me, without realizing that what we're doing is protecting this system that has got that belief lodged in there and is maintaining it all the time. Even though, I mean, we know, at least intellectually, that can't possibly be true.
And I suspect that we're never hiding anything from anybody. You know, you know, it's just this weird little thing we play with ourselves while everybody else can see this glaring, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of motivation in that to just spill our guts.
Right.
Well, I'm certainly. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. No. Go ahead.
My God, I thought you'd never say it. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think that then for sure that I don't think we hide it from ourselves.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what we're trying to do, too, right? I mean, we, like, tell ourselves something that is attempting to hide. Well, I mean, I didn't really, that was really what happened. Or, you know, I didn't really do that. Or, I wasn't really being deceptive. Or, you know, oh, that was just, there was just some really good reason for that. Or, but it's on some level, we know. We know what's going on.
Yeah.
The thing that's really hard to catch on to is that we're in collusion with conditioning in that.
Yeah.
That we're protecting conditioning.
Yeah, that's the hard thing. Yeah, that we're protecting. Yeah, this self-hating system that's just so ugly, mm-hmm. and that is, has nothing to contribute.
Right. Yeah. I think, at least for me, I think, I think that I'm protecting this self who is not the right person.
Right.
That's not what's going on at all.
Yeah.
I'm protecting the idea that there is this self that's not the right person, mm-hmm. which is the way conditioning is kind of trying to be in control of me all the time.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's my... it just seems to be what's up for me right now, and I just wanted to look at it a little more. And
seems really important, doesn't it?
It seems really, really important. And, you know, it seems like it does seem like an important foundation of a spiritual life, mm-hmm. which, you know, to face those things.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it's, you know, it's just facing, I guess, my humanness, too.
Your humanness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That, and there's just been resistance to that, too.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not human. I'm like something else, you know, that's, doesn't have all of those, vulnerabilities.
Yeah. I love the word humility in that place. There's so much freedom there.
Yeah. And that is humility, isn't it, to,
mm-hmm.
to look at those things.
Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people put a negative association on that word, but mm-hmm. It just seems really, not negative, it seems really empowering in a way. You know, just, like even just thinking about, like, those behaviors you're talking about, you know, hiding things, mm-hmm. you know, to instead out them,
mm-hmm.
And of course what's going to happen out here is you're not going to get the self-hate in response, mm-hmm. you're going to get acceptance in response, and just outing those things, could be really powerful in terms of, finding out that you're human,
mm-hmm.
with all the the good, the bad, and the ugly that goes along with that,
mm-hmm.
and that's completely okay.
Yeah, and it seems very, I don't know, as you're talking about it, this seems really essential to be able to be with others and yourself in a compassionate way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just seems like a big doorway to compassion.
Yeah.
To be able to see that.
Yeah, kind of like Chris was talking about, it would be much more challenging in an environment that was also supporting the idea that there's something wrong with us.
Yeah. So...
I'm going to get out that flashlight, eh? Stop crawling around some of the buildings.
I'm going to charge it today.
We don't have too many creepy, crawly places, but I bet we could find some.
And actually, it's kind of fun. It's kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet. Exciting for the heart, isn't
it? The heart, feels very excited about that. Just for going for it. And... I don't know, it just reminds me of, when I first came to the monastery, it was, I did a lot of crying. I don't know why I was crying, but a lot of crying. But I knew that, intuitively, that I had just done something really big for my heart and for some young parts of myself that really need to be cared for.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like,
feels like that.
That same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good feeling.
We're going in, gang.
We're going in.
Hang on.
It's
gonna be okay, I'll take care of you.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
So. Thank you. Sit tight.
I'm just hugely grateful for seeing through a huge process that's been arising for a couple of weeks. It seems that yesterday just clearly presented. It's been showing up kind of all week, and with the talk of the release of the new book and the guide and Shira talking about the title and stuff, it was a pretty fairly busy week with the retreat. And yesterday, the last couple of days, I've just been so clearly hearing that process in the exact words of that title of that book. I don't feel like I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I showed up for working meditation, I don't feel like I don't want to.
Mm-hmm. So it's a process of resistance, of course,
exactly.
Which is the topic of the book.
Yeah, every time. And as the day wore on, I have sort of these power outages from time to time.
Power what?
Power outages, where the body just feels like I can't take another step.
Mm-hmm.
It literally feels that way, and I'm kind of like, wow, I don't know if I can go another 10 minutes here. And I know it's that story of resistance, that story of I don't want to, I don't feel like it.
So it's, are you saying it's not actually an experience in the body?
Well, there is definitely, with the recent focus on the body, I've been really more tuned in. So physically, definitely, I was checking in with the body saying, yeah, we're physically tired. But it's that layer on top of it that was really causing that oppression of just that resistance of just showing up for what's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
what life is offering.
Mm-hmm.
And so by yesterday afternoon, towards snack time, it was like, oh my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to do here. It just, it got so great. But it had this awareness that it was that resistance, that story. And so the guide has been encouraging me to look at that relationship, that relationship with conditioning and self-hate that I have previously focused on the process of suffering and calling it out and looking at it. And her encouragement is, look at the process of not suffering. Look at the process of just redirecting away from that story. It's
which is also a big theme of the new book, I believe.
Uh-huh, yeah. So sort of towards snap time, it just dropped in. It occurred to me like, oh, I'm really in this story of being super tired and, you know, I'm starving and I just want to eat, shower, bed. That was the mantra. And that's not that encouraging when the day really wasn't over. In many respects, because life had some other things
that
had come up. So, and through the whole sit, that's all it was, eat, sleep, you know. So the sit's over, and just a little bit of content, because it should really hit the process. And so I get in the kitchen, ready for dinner, and the supervisor says, oh, we've got some things to do back here. So dinner was delayed. No conditioning enjoyed that. So I raged at that delay of dinner. And it was only about 5 minutes, but to conditioning, it wanted its needs met, it wanted to gorge on food. So we tried to have a mindful dinner, and then after snack cleanup, I was colluding with it. I really felt like it was like, hey, get it needs met. Just get to the shower, get home, get to bed, get shower, get it. Turn the corner, there's a supervisor. Oh, blah blah blah. Would you be willing to finish this task? That's gonna be a few minutes away from my shower time. So So we went and did that, and life just keeps presenting. So it's and we're doing this task, and about 20 minutes later, it's like, okay, my time, in quotations, my time. I turn the corner, it goes, there's just no way we're going to go this way. We can get this. I run into the supervisor. Oh, would you be willing to do such and such? Wow. But every time I saw it, it was like, that was just, that last encouragement was like, that's it. I let it go. It's like, that's it. And it dropped. And the energy resurged, and it was like, okay, I saw it.
Oh, okay, good.
Saw it. That was it. We may have a shower, may not. We may get to bed by midnight, maybe not, but that's it.
Yeah, that's sure is what I was predicting throughout this whole thing. It's not necessarily an experience in the body in the sense that it's being caused in the body.
Yeah.
I mean, the body is having whatever experience it's having, but it's, you know, for sure reacting to the resistance that's going on in the body. And there's just no energy. You know, when we're in collusion with conditioning like that, there's no energy. It just feels like we can't go on.
Yeah.
But to let go of that,
suddenly
the energy is back. And really, you know, the body can do amazing things.
It can.
When the conditioned mind is not manipulating it.
Yeah.
It so much.
And it's funny you said it, because the last task was pretty physically demanding. And I just had this surge of energy. And it was effortless. Where an hour before, I would probably said, I don't know if I can do that physically.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no conversation about it. It was like, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
The energy came back in. I was out of the story. I was present. Went ahead and did it. And it was just. And then as I was walking home, I had my recorder, and I just recorded that whole day, and all those processes, and seeing through it, and that liberation. And when I got home, I was just—I wasn't tired. I didn't want to go to bed. I was, let's do some yoga. I was, walking around my villages, looking at the stars. I was like, wow, you know, geez, 2 hours ago I was dead, tired, and now I'm like, what do I do with this energy?
Yeah, it's amazing,
isn't it? It's just.
And isn't it good that we have a practice that can show that to us?
Yes.
Because otherwise it just becomes real.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the meaning gets attached to it. Like, I'm somebody who doesn't have enough energy, or, you know, like that, or my body is not doing what it used to be able to do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just kind of goes, spirals down. Mm-hmm. But to have these experiences where we see what's actually happening and let that go and see the change that happens and what's possible, it really opens up a big door to a different relationship with the body, for example.
Yeah, huge change. And just, and then just huge, you know, just recorded again right before bed, just a grab, just this huge gratitude list for just going through that experience. Of, at the time, it wasn't pleasant, it was, you know, uncomfortable, and it was, you know, kind of, I was in it, and it was gruesome, but boy, to get to the other side of it so quickly, and to see it all within the context of just life bringing everything I needed to see it. You know, just keep, you know, it was amazing to just keep hitting things that allowed me to see it. Mm-hmm. Where without hitting those things, I might have just cruised through, like you said.
Never would have seen it.
Never would have seen it.
Just believed it.
Yep, just would have believed it and would have had me for another day. Mm-hmm. And when it comes in, if I don't feel like that, I don't want to, I'll go, yeah, we've been there.
Yeah, we've been through this already.
Yeah, it's clearly laid out, but we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to love it, and we're going to take care of it and enjoy it. So, very grateful.
Thank you. So, Jen.
I really appreciated the conversation. I can very much see processes for myself in all of it. I have a very similar process to what was just being talked about yesterday. There was this, I'd actually forgotten about it, but there was this moment where I wasn't really, you know, we make a drastic shift like that from, you know, tons of people on retreat, tons going on, to suddenly they leave and we're in a whole different kind of thing. I wasn't even really focused on them. What exactly is the schedule this afternoon? I can't really, you know, I don't really remember. And as I sort of began to drill down on that, there was this, oh my gosh, there might actually be this little piece of time in the middle of the day to just go, you know, whatever, take a walk or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so just quietly, I think something very subtly began to insert itself into that.
Yes. Oh boy.
Yes. And what was really fun to see is that like 3 minutes into it, I realized that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
And it immediately, it wasn't even like, okay, I better let go of that because that's going to cause suffering. It was just a, oh, it's going to go this way.
Uh-huh.
And even that's not quite right, but it's like, it's back to the thing of, I don't know, maybe it points at the time is an illusion thing, but like, okay, so for these 60 minutes, whatever that is, you know, I'm going to do something. And so it doesn't matter what it is.
It really doesn't.
You know, I can just, again, this, it wasn't even this deliberate, but a way to talk about it is I can have what I want in those 60 minutes, regardless of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so then I just completely relax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you're able, from that place, you're able to just kind of really go with whatever is happening.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Completely whatever. Just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Doesn't completely does not matter, and of course the being gets what she wants in that,
right.
Just as much as it's not like a martyred self-sacrifice kind of a thing,
right?
Yeah.
The being gets exactly what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, so you know, when there's that, so you realize there's that timeless schedule, and then there's that subtle kind of, I don't know what it is for you, for me it's oh boy, you know, or something. You know, just, or whatever, you know, they're like a, there starts to be a movement towards like attachment to
it.
So, I think what I'm hearing you say is, I mean, that's a part of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not you. And so, and you're not really identifying with that part of you.
Mm-hmm.
You're aware of that part of you who is, who has that relationship with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so because you're basically staying here with the being, which is different from that part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not confused. You're not tangled up in that. And you're available to life as it kind of shifts.
Well, as you say that, what it feels like to me is that there's a part of me who, I suspect it is a subpersonality, who is used to thinking of, that's when she's allowed to relax. That's when she's allowed to be okay. That's when blah, blah, blah.
And kind of that's how you get your needs met? Sort of.
Yeah, so she genuinely feels like, oh, that's great.
great.
That's a good thing.
That's going to be neat.
Mm-hmm.
And then ego is like perfect. Okay, we can attach to that. That's excellent, especially mm-hmm. since it knows in the background it's never going to happen.
Right.
So,
and the way it does that is that's now that becomes really important. We need that instead of
exactly.
this.
Exactly. We need that content.
Mm-hmm.
And what I suspect happens in awareness is that the awareness is able to give that part of me what she wants, regardless of the content. So, oh, it turns out we're not going to get to go for a walk, but that's not even what she wanted anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All she wanted was to be okay and to be relaxed and not be stressed out.
I love that. So the awareness, I think you said the awareness is able to give that part of you what she wants.
Right. So then she doesn't have to be attached mm-hmm. to the law or to the whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're paying attention, then we see, oh, I have what I want.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not paying attention, then ego can keep the attention on the content, mm-hmm. and then it's, darn it, I don't get that content.
Yeah, and we're basically identified with the smaller person instead of the awareness that's able to provide for that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if it's related, but I was inspired by the conversation around the fear thing. Because I've really been seeing again, I mean, it's not new, but again, sort of as this transcending resistance theme is here, there's a huge piece of karma that, you know, I talk about all the time, but that I realize it's a place where egocentric karmic conditioning is really able to scare the being, I think, the being. And what I was looking at with the two pieces, so what I just described a minute ago, is this place where, wow, practice really works. Because
mm-hmm.
it would be so easy to suffer over that,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's happening
no
every place, all
yeah,
the time, everywhere.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that what, as that arose yesterday, what arose right along with it was just the wisdom of life of how not to need to suffer with that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Kind of shows how practice works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what I see with this other place is that the fear is still so effective.
Mm-hmm.
That there's this thing of, yes, but this really, really difficult thing could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it does happen. It has happened. And it's really hard. And the really hard is that in the times when it has happened, there's such an internal feeling of devastation that it's things like completely lose the appetite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back to the energy, like,
mm-hmm.
whoa,
no energy.
Can't move, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's, it's interesting as I look at it. I mean, I don't know yet. I'm excited about the transcending resistance coming up because I think it's a huge place that resistance lives,
mm-hmm.
that there's some big still kind of fog around it
mm-hmm.
that I'm not seeing, but it's, I really think the main fear, belief that's still in place is that I won't be able to stand that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even though I have many times.
It's not your actual experience.
Yeah. I mean, even that can get used against me in the sense of, yeah, and it's been awful. You know?
That's interesting, because that's an interpretation. I mean, it's,
yeah.
It was probably, I mean, I don't know if we could say, to say it's painful is without interpretation,
uh-huh.
but it's closer to being without interpretation than
yeah,
it's awful.
Awful. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's painful. Well, and just even on that, you can't eat, you know,
yeah.
you don't have, there's no energy in the body.
Yeah.
You know, like all of those are kind of sort of, you know, like facts. I mean, they're actually
right.
sort of happening.
Uh-huh.
You're in that experience
yeah.
Basically adequate to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when you're so having the experience, you're not separate from it.
Yeah.
But looking forward to the experience, there's a separation. So there's really no way to experience the adequacy of that because it's not here. It's like being cooked up out of nothing.
Yeah.
And along with that comes the whole package, you know, and you're inadequate to it. It's going to be
yeah,
terrible.
Exactly.
It's going to be horrible. It's going to be devastating.
Yeah. And I think that some of what you just said comes close to describing what it really is, which is that, let's see, it just went through, but it's something like, what is so difficult for the being is the illusion of separation.
Mm-hmm.
Is the being talked into, you know, you're separate from life. I mean, you're separate from yourself, you're separate mm-hmm. from God, however you want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. But that is what's so difficult. And that, because of course, as you're pointing at, even in that, okay, when the thing that's supposedly so difficult happens, just being in it,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's tons of freedom in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, the thing, that's where ego's fear is that I'll sit through that.
Right, yeah. Because yeah, I've seen that too, because in the actual experience, it's not necessary to be separate.
Right.
I mean, it could be. You could go to conditioning and hate this or try to make it different, all those kind of things that we do.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary.
Yeah.
It's possible just to be in the actual experience that's happening, mm-hmm. not being separate, and in a way, not suffering at all in the way that we might, looking forward to that, being talked into a place of separation, imagining it, and really being connected with conditioning instead of with life.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, it's the same old thing, isn't it? Because as you're saying that, what I realize in those places is that the laser attention that's required, I mean, it's essential that the attention is directed to the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because just a hair's breadth away is like the world of absolute hell.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's so interesting, isn't it? So of course, you know, yeah. I mean, on the one hand, I suspect ego loves that. First of all, it loves the whole setup. It loves that it can hold that over my head,
mm-hmm.
you know? This could happen, you know? And then, yeah, I don't know, it's interesting. Yeah, so it loves that it could happen, it loves to be able to hold it over my head, but the actual experience of completely letting go and being there in that, quote, difficult experience,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's its fear for sure.
Yeah, it would love it a lot better if you could pay attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because
then it could just, it could just make this whole thing real and just drag you through it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it must be a challenging place for ego, actually.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too.
Because it's kind of got.
Not sure what to go for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It almost has to try to take you into it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're not suffering.
Yeah.
But then, if it takes you into it, you know very well how to be present in an experience like that. You've done it lots of times, even with this, and lots more times with all the other possible things that can happen.
Yeah, it's got to scream at you in there. It's got to scream at you.
It's got to go crazy. Yeah, and it can only do so much. You know, it only gets so loud.
Yeah.
And we just to continually have experiences where we see that it's not real, and that we're more powerful than it is. We can be here instead of being separate or completely out of it. You know, all these things we talk about.
Yeah.
Boy, it's just taking hit after hit after hit.
Yeah. And there's definitely now places that this did not used to happen, kind of back to the, you know, get the flashlights out of the, here we go, girls.
Uh-huh.
You know? And a sense of every time we come out of this, there's some deeper insight, some deeper seeing, some greater amount of freedom.
And
so, kind of as it feels like, at least for me, it's such a track, you know, such a track that it can feel like, as it, you know, it's like, what's an image like those alpine skis? Anyway, where you start to go in the track and it's like, oh God, the momentum's building. The momentum is building.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it's sort of starting to suck you down the track. But, of course, often when there's that, like, okay, here we go, girls, this is going to, I mean, sometimes that'll just jump you right off the track, you know, because if there isn't the fear of the track, that's often the momentum it takes to pull you down the track, you know, mm-hmm. the suffering track,
mm-hmm.
and the complete acceptance right at the beginning of it, ironically, mm-hmm. will often just take you right off. Wait, I thought we were going to go down that chute again.
Uh-huh.
And then you don't go down, but not always.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you. Let's see, I saw Kimma next.
Okay. This has all been really great. The talking about the fear and needing to get the flashlight, but having, being afraid to, that was just such a perfect metaphor for the, it seems like it's becoming clearer that conditioning is just such a locked in system, that it's got everything, you know, every single component to keep you going around within it.
It's got all the exits blocked.
It's got, you know,
supposedly.
And if it's got security so that if there's one that's unlocked, and, you know what I mean? It's just an amazing system.
That's funny. I'm thinking about, you know, the like you see in the movies in these places where there's all those, like, you know, 20 TVs.
Yeah.
Conditioning's in that room.
That one.
Yeah. Conditioning's in that room and has all the switches. Yeah. And it's like, because the you know, there's the awareness that I need to look there. I'm not free if I can't look in the dark corner, if I can't turn the light on. So conditioning flips the fear button. And so that's like a real natural survival thing. Oh, fear. Stay away from that.
Yeah, and we're trained, too.
Trained.
Because the closer we get to what he doesn't want us to see, the more the sensations are there. And that's kind of tells us where
red
we don't
alert,
want to go.
Red alert. Back off. And it's just such an ingenious system. For me, what happens with me is one of the loops it gets me on is that I get isolated, and it starts to have something to talk to me about, you know. Well,
you're starting to believe something.
Starting to believe something, and what I need to do is communicate to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I do that, every time I communicate, it turns out that I learn that it's fabricated, it's conditioning, and you know, what are we calling it these days? Well, EKC, whatever, knows that's the hook that will get me, and so all I need to do is check it out, communicate. As soon as I'm in communication, I belong again.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're not separate.
And it's all just it all just melts like the witch when she got water on her, you know. And so, but and it's so easy. But then I get talked into, I can't communicate. There are these really good reasons that, you know, it's going to show how paranoid I am, or what a weirdo I am, because I'm having these, you know, this, that. And so then I stay isolated within the system. And it's just getting so clear that the resistance is the flag. You know, that, I mean, if I'm getting, I feel like I should communicate, and then there's all this, no, you can't do that.
Wait a second, we know what's happening here.
Yeah, not only do we know what's happening here, it's happened a whole bunch of times before this. It kind of gives a clue. And so it's like as we go through practice, we see this little bit, and then we just keep like taking, getting a bigger view. And eventually it feels like seeing that this is a system, this isn't me. And now I see a little bit more about how it works each time I have a collision with all of this.
And more and more to change the behavior that the whole thing is standing on.
Yes.
That's interesting, isn't it? That it's standing on behavior. You know, communicate, no, don't communicate. If you don't communicate, that's just taking a turn into conditioning.
Yep.
If you communicate, it's taking a turn out of conditioning. So it sort of has to gamble its whole thing on the idea that you believe the way it's saying, or communicating, so you can stay with it. Which is kind of helpful, isn't it? Because there's this place right there every single time where it's possible to turn the other way.
Yeah.
Not in a real ethereal sort of way that it's just hard to see, but a real tangible way.
Yeah.
Just open your mouth and say something, it's all over.
Yeah, and it doesn't really even have anything to do about the content, because the content, my suspicions, could be true. It could be that I've messed up somewhere and I'm getting messages from people that, you know, kind of out of favor or whatever. It doesn't really matter. That could be true, but the communication will be such that that's what I see, that and then there's something to work with.
Yeah, and then
but sitting there just wondering what's going on is just hell for this being, for this really condition. So
yeah. Plus, you're not just stuck with that. It's, you know, there's like, well, maybe, you know, I did something unskillful. There's all the meaning that gets attached to that.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you communicate that and find out, oh, well, you know, that really happened. There has been this unskillful thing. But it's not. It doesn't have all that meaning stuck to it. It's just, oh, I just need to not do this, and I need to do this, or I need to do this in a different way that's going to work better for everybody, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's like it's you get to have a, you get to change your behavior. You get to do things that are more skillful and more appropriate within a context of acceptance, so that you don't have to feel bad about yourself and mm-hmm. you know, be isolated with conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
You get to join with others, even though, you know, the behavior might be, you know, not what everybody's looking for or whatever.
Exactly. And whatever the behavior is, regardless of how unskillful it was, it's not as bad as what is happening in here, sitting with it and mm-hmm. imagining something else.
Completely.
It's just not. It's
that's as bad as it gets.
That's it for me. That is the worst. It's mm-hmm. sitting there, you know, not knowing, oh dear, there goes ego. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the other sense of being isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's really good to see that it seems like within the system, whatever it is that will break a person out of the system is what ego will make sure you're believing you is not what you
can't
you
do
cannot
that.
Do that.
Cannot.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, okay, well, that's getting clearer. If I hear that, then I can just go do it.
Yeah, that's great. And then we're using the voices against conditioning, basically, instead of using them to support it.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a check-in. You know, if we can train ourselves to recognize that, then that can tell us, it's really clear, isn't it? It tells us exactly what we need to do.
Yeah, yeah, and we've heard this all along since the beginning, you know. But it was on, I think, more gross levels. It's just getting mm-hmm. subtler and subtler as we go through all these iterations of new practice tools mm-hmm. and so forth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's really fun to be part of this conversation because the book's being written as we talk. So the thing that I've been looking at, or what dropped in for me in meditation is how it's evidence of a process, and it's like the week was so intense that I was aware of spot awarenesses and identification, but unable to process anything.
Just because the attention was so engaged.
Well, I'm looking at what was the reason for that, and then there's the lull, and then all of a sudden, everything that I wasn't that I might have been aware of has suddenly started to bubble up to look at,
mm-hmm.
and so that itself was interesting as a process because I think mm-hmm. on an experience level, the intensity at which life was going allowed me to know when something dropped in or when the identification was hovering,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't able to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it never went away.
Mm-hmm.
And now that there's space, because the pace is much slower,
mm-hmm.
it's available to process.
Did it feel kind of like it's like being saved up in whole mind? In
a way. Yeah, sort of like the awareness is still registering everything,
mm-hmm.
and there's an awareness for me in watching that happen, in terms of being present to all of it, but being just present in awareness, as opposed to present in awareness engaging with. Recognition and processing. Mm-hmm. So it was a registration, not a processing process.
I see. Things are coming through. It's like,
exactly. And now,
but it's passing right away because the attention is just continually going on to the next thing as it's required to do.
Right. And I think what I just saw is that the transformation is still happening. It's just that the awareness of the transformation is different. And now mm-hmm. I get to see, because there's a little bit more space to see, all of this, all of those registrations, if you will. And
don't forget, Rio, just one curiosity question. When it shows up again in the low, does it show up in the same form? Or does it show up having been processed in a way that's not intentional like that?
Well, it depends on the content. The identification, the places where I felt I got identified, show up as a possible conversation to make me feel bad.
Okay.
But it's always a second after the awareness of what happened.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's just an interesting thing that I haven't noticed about what it is. And during meditation, what dropped in is maybe what I was looking at in that in places of intensity, I tend to have focused attention, but not very expanded awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And in places of lull, I tend to have a lot of expanded awareness, with attention able to move between things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just that, for the first time, I've noticed that that's the difference in presence. And so the interesting inquiry place is, in intensity, what is it like to be in expanded awareness?
At the same time.
At the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I've had that experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it'll be interesting to pay attention and see.
It really will. Because obviously the awareness is there.
Yes.
Because all those things are dropping to awareness. I think it sounds like what you're looking at is, like, what happens with those things and with the awareness that can hold those things while the attention is so focused and so engaged at the same time.
Right, yeah. And the framework within which I think I've been working in the last 2 weeks is a quote from Alan Watts, and he said that the spiritual awakening is the difficult process by which the increasing realization that there's something wrong gets flipped into everything is as right as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I was aware of these intense moments in the kitchen where there was nothing more important than washing that dish. You know, there was no conversation, there was nothing. That the moment of service, the joy, the complete alignment of, there's nothing else in this moment that life needs to be doing than washing dishes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting experience of attention, because I was aware of that, I was attending to it, and there was no sense of separation. It was just a sense of complete rightness.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was all of those places over time where the identification starts to come in, and I'm either physically tired, I'm aware that I'm physically tired, or there's just too much going on, or whatever, the feeling of wrongness starts to be the flip in the orientation. And I'm aware of the awareness, places where that feels the same as washing the dishes.
Like you're attending to the identification as it arises in the same way that you might attend to the dish.
That's right. Mm-hmm. In the sense of, it's not wrong, that I don't have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just aware of it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know where I'm going with it, other than the fact that now it's all available to look at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to look at in a way that it wasn't available to look at while I was in it.
So maybe you can explain. So there's a focus on the dish, there's that washing the dish, there's that sense of rightness, and there's a kind of a completeness
mm-hmm.
right there.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that as compared to, the kind of processing that you're talking about. What's similar, what's different there?
Well, so I have the experience of someone saying there's an input, and the conditioned response arises, and I don't go with it, and so I just come back to the present
right.
and continue with whatever is present in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can see the input, I could see the conditioned response, and I'm actually aware of what karma was trying to assert itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that now there's the insight about why is the conditioned response arising to that input.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can say, okay, well, it was that piece of karma, or I think it was this, or here's the behavior that I can practice so that the next time it happens, it might be different.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting place because there's such a discernment around what is present there trying to do that.
Trying to do that processing?
That's right.
That's kind of what I was curious about. Mm-hmm.
Because the in the context of that quote or what I'm playing with, the orientation flip between the everything right and everything as it should be versus everything not as it should be is such a razor's edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm playing on the oscillation there because that place is not very expanded.
Yeah, and it's a tricky place, isn't it? Because I could see two possibilities there. One is an out of the moment experience where it's basically kind of like there's a memory being fed to conditioned mind to interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is an in the moment experience where it's not even a memory at that point.
Well,
because it's here.
Information coming through that is assisting in the transformation.
Exactly.
And it couldn't have happened in that moment, and again, I don't know, because that wasn't a place for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In that place of the dish is the only thing that's important, why I had a conditioned response to some input that I was aware of, I was present to it, I was aware that it was happening, but it didn't seem to be the place where life was going to give me the information about what I needed to be doing about it. Then.
Right. And there is information.
There is information.
And so it's kind of like, it's sort of like, tell me if I'm with you. So the things are happening, the attention is too engaged really to, there's not enough space for life to drop in kind of the more expanded kind of information that goes with it. So it's kind of like those things are orbiting.
Yeah.
You know, while the attention is engaged like that, they're just kind of, they're there. You're not really probably even aware of it so much. It's not like your attention is on it, but they're still, in a way, kind of in your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And then the space opens up, and then now there's room to kind of drop them in. So it's they're being dropped in the moment. They're not being pulled out from another moment into this moment and being kind of analyzed. They're dropping in the moment, and then the response that may have been available, for example, when it actually happened, if there had been the space for it, is now happening.
That's right. And mm-hmm. What I was aware of when you said that, oh God, it's gone. It's truly whether that the question for me is that conditioned mind or a different process?
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of feeling about it that arose when you were saying that is, if it is that place when I'm looking at it from the just from the holding of awareness, then I'm aware that I'm in the orientation of everything's right
mm-hmm.
as it can be,
mm-hmm.
and therefore I can contain whatever storm it is without feeling that there's something wrong,
mm-hmm.
and so. The quality of the place, and it's very relevant to the conversation we were having, the quality of the place from which I'm looking at it implies that I am not in a relationship with conditioning.
That's what I was saying.
Because I'm not afraid.
Yeah.
There is no... All of the things that that come with conditioning, looking at conditioning, is not present in that place when information is being offered about a conditioned karmic process.
Yeah, for example, it's all is right instead of there's something wrong with this.
That's right.
Yeah. I was seeing that too, that it really comes down to who's here, doesn't it? If there's a who's here. So if there's a who, you know, a person who's looking at this, then embedded in that is going to be all those karmic assumptions, like there's something wrong, you know, all those kind of things, the anxiety, the fear, everything that kind of goes with it. If there isn't, if it's just awareness embracing what arises, then none of those things are there. And it sounds like, tell me if I'm right, I think that's what you're looking at is is the difference between those two places, and which is, you know, what is coming from life in that and what isn't.
Yes, and I think it really got clear this moment, because if the system is a negative system,
right.
So any reference to a negative system is only going to produce a negative response.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're in the place where you're accessing all of the wholeness of life and of awareness, the output, no matter what goes in, is never negative.
Right, because it's not, there isn't, the input isn't negative.
Well, even if the input is quote-unquote negative in the sense of what conditioning might call negative, the processing of it doesn't result in anything that isn't whole.
There's no assumptions like there's something wrong in this.
Yeah, so there can't be an output that there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So pain goes in, and pain is pain. There's no meaning attached to
mm-hmm.
it. And I can hold pain from a place of that's all there is,
mm-hmm.
or even fear that's all there is,
mm-hmm.
rather than come from the place of consulting the system that says there's something wrong with it.
Right. Yeah, and it gets kind of, with that orientation, it gets kind of clear, doesn't it? I was looking at that when somebody else was talking, that it becomes really clear when we veer off from center, because there's immediate consequences.
Yes.
So in terms of what you're saying, immediate consequences are basically the assumptions of conditioned mind.
Yeah.
You know, there's something wrong, I'm afraid, I'm separate, you know, all those things, and plus all the sensations and everything that go with that. And so it's kind of like a litmus test. You know, we can, it can kind of guide us as we go through, because especially, you know, the more we see about conditioning and how it works, it becomes clear and clear what the signs are when there's been, it's been contaminated.
Right. In other words, it's always clear what process I'm in. I'm
mm-hmm.
either in the process of suffering or I'm not in the process of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy to tell. And I can be, mm-hmm. and this is the awareness I think that I'm moving towards, is I cannot be in the process of suffering if I'm in the process of awareness looking at suffering.
Mm-hmm. You can't.
I can't suffer.
You can't suffer. You can't see it and be it at the same
That's
time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you. Christine, and then we'll finish.
So what I was just noticing is that so I do this thing where I guess I, as a part of me, feels like she needs to practice or know what I'm going to bring to group or what I'm going to bring to a guidance appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can be listening to my recorder during the day, and different things will come up that I might want to talk about. But, so what I just noticed with what somebody else was saying is that when I do that, that need to, and I've seen this before in another way, but that need to practice so that I appear to be knowing what I'm talking about, or I appear to be something. I appear to look like I know what I'm talking about. I appear to
look good.
Yeah, look good and be clear and whatever. So therefore, when I come to group, of course I can't remember what I was going to, what that big thing was, or that cool thing was that I'm supposed to be talking about is. Like, conditioning gets me to say, to think that would be the thing to
mm-hmm.
bring to group or to guidance, and then
never makes it in the room.
Confuses me with, what was that, and oh gosh, and blah, blah, you know.
I wonder if it's just that you're here when you're in group, and so that conversation that happens in separation just isn't available to you.
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm
mm-hmm.
I'm I'm enjoying, I'm relating to people, I'm,
yeah. So you can't pull this whole rehearsal out of conditioned mind, because it's just not here.
But what I'm hearing that is that if I don't, that I, so then that happens, and then I feel like, well, I can't share because now I'm confused, and I don't know what to share.
That's my script outside.
But then I'm told I'm supposed to, or I'll lose an opportunity for looking at something that will bring me deeper into what I'm looking at. You know, I'm losing that opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so, are you having a scripted conversation right now, or is this
no?
Okay, how's it going?
Good. Okay, that's right. Because there was. So then what I also noticed, just sitting here when I was listening, that there were what would be the problem with that? And it does seem like there, I guess it does just come down to that fear of I won't have anything to say.
Or it's fear that you're completely adequate, that you'll channel the wisdom of life and whatever form that arises for you in the moment, and everything that it hates and doesn't agree with its plan.
Yeah. And I know that happens.
Mm-hmm. And that's helpful, isn't it? Because that kind of gives a place to stand against that conditioning.
Yeah.
But, you know, because you have the experience that you're just present, and then you just speak from your experience, and it all works. Everything's good about that. It feels good. And so having that experience is easier to, it kind of gives you some leverage against that story that, you know, you're not able, you have to be prepared and all those kind of things. And helps to drop it.
Yeah. Yeah. And one other thing. Before, it seems, so what I noticed what conditioning is doing, I've packed up my house and I've moved, and I have everything I want in my truck. Well, I have the storage unit also, but... And it seems like conditioning is like, and I brought this into the, when I came to the monastery now too, is that it's a little bit, it feels thrown off and kind of confused, and
it feels thrown off and confused.
Yeah, because I'm thrilled. Like, I'm just so excited, this is what I wanted to do, and then I'm doing it, and And it's really important that I remind myself, like, yeah, you know, good job. You know, you actually drove there, and now...
It's like, God, what are we going to do with this?
I know.
What the situation?
It does seem like conditioning is a little bit like, oh, gosh. Yeah. It may be there's a little bit of, I wonder when it's going to hit me with something, but... I guess it doesn't matter. I'm not going to worry about what it's going to do because I'm, and again, this part of what I'm doing, I'm thrilled to be here right now. And I think I like outran it or something, or followed my heart too much, and it was like, oh my God, now what can we do?
Yeah, you know, it's hitchhiking across country right now.
I know, it's walking.
It's walking.
Yeah, so that's good. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.